Yeah, so I want to thank you all for coming to this session because there are a lot of really good topics going on right now. So hopefully we'll make this worthwhile for you. I suppose we can get started. All right, so we're going to be talking about CSR, client-side rendering. If you really want to sit here and look at all the words, that's the abstract. I'm not going to linger on it. What we're talking about this morning is going to be, again, what's called client-side rendering. And I'm specifically talking about the way that you implement CSR through the JS link property. I'll explain what that is and where it is. The reason I give this disclaimer, not disclaimer, but caveat, is that there are different ways of implementing CSR. There are different ways of using JS link. We're going to be talking about the one that is primarily through the web browser. So I'm targeting not just developers, but also getting into power users that are comfortable with code. So you can get in there and do some basic tweaks. Some of the examples that I'm going to be showing you hopefully are things that across the board people can use. Kind of boiler template types of things. But again, we'll get into it a little bit, and then you can see what it is. For developers, we're really getting into stuff that we're going to show you the basic concept, and I think as a developer, you're going to look at it and go, oh, I can do this and this and this and kind of go as deep as you want. So I'm going to be giving you guys that entry point, and then we'll go from there. And as I tend to do, I'll get ahead of myself, usually by a slide or so. So CSR and JS Link, like I said, this is something where I have an intro slide, so I'll tell you who I am in a minute here. But my background is really, let's use the out-of-the-box as much as we can. I am not an anti-developer person. I'm saying use the out-of-the-box capabilities as best you can before you get into development. So know when to do development so you're not reinventing the wheel. You're not breaking stuff that is supposed to work a different way. So again, that's kind of where we fit in the tool set. You can do a lot of great stuff out of the box. You can do a ton of really super stuff with development. This is a stepping stone for some people, or it's just another tool in their tool set for others. So we're going to explain what the basics are of JS Link and CSR. We're going to show you some practical examples, and then we'll wrap it up. So hopefully we'll stay right on time. My name is Wes Preston. I am based in Minneapolis. My background is that when I got into SharePoint, I was more of an IT pro, basically because someone had to be back then. It was 2003, the day that 2003 came out. I've got a background in IT pro. I've also spent a bunch of time doing development, both before and after that. But now my main focus is, again, with kind of the out-of-the-box capabilities and more along the strategy line, so helping organizations understand if SharePoint is what they need, and if so, how to use it the best way. That's where I spend most of my time, but you know, as SharePoint is, most of us end up getting in there and tweaking things from day to day as it is anyways. So that's who I am, lots of tests and what have you. Most useful thing you can see up there is my blog. I also, if you have gone to that Yammer page, I've already put a couple of additional links up there, so you don't even necessarily have to write this stuff down. I also want to bring up Raymond Mitchell is in here helping me, one of my cohorts. He's going to be watching that second screen, so if you guys are asking questions, either mostly during the session, he'll be able to take a look at those. But use that second screen if you can, or use that Yammer page if you can, because I think that's going to be really useful, not only during the session, but after it, so we can continue the conversation. Raymond's also from the Minneapolis area. He's been around longer than I have in the SharePoint world. You can get a hold of him on those places as well. So he's already linked on the second screen, so you can see him there. All right. So we're going to spend a few minutes going over the general features and overview of what JS Link is. This was something that was introduced with 2013, but a lot of people aren't using it yet. A lot of people didn't even know that it exists. How many folks have used the JS Link in the web browser? Sweet. The first time we did this session, we had a slightly larger room, and we had about 700 people in there. No one had even heard about it. I mean, if now that you've seen it, you've seen that it's this property way down at the bottom of the web part properties page. If you're not looking for it, you probably don't know it's there. So we're trying to broaden that exposure so folks know what we've got. So we'll spend a few minutes going over just how it works, the nuts and bolts, but I'm not going to linger on that because we've already covered that and we've got some great blog posts about it. And then we'll go through a couple of different examples. Again, if you're a hardcore developer, they're going to seem really simple. And you're going to look at my JavaScript and go, what are you doing, idiot? That's not my strength. That's not what I'm here to do is talk about JavaScript best practices. I just want to show you the basics, the nuts and bolts, so that you can go in there and use it and employ all that power that you've got as developers to make some of this stuff really cool. So some of the examples we have, we'll go through those when we get to them. And then we'll also talk just a tad about governance so that we can make sure we cover what we're supposed to be covering. And I've got a lot of references. I'm not going to walk through each one of them, but I wanted to make them available to you guys going forward. So that's what we've got. So the why. Why are we talking about this? SharePoint's a really great tool. It's got a lot of really great out-of-the-box capabilities and a lot of power for end users to kind of get the data that they need. We've got lists. We've got libraries. Everything's supposed to be called apps now. We've got this great these great things called views where we can configure the data that's coming out. But even with all of this, it's got limitations. And in most engagements that I've been in, folks always want to make it look just a little different. I want to do this with this field. I want to just make the experience a little bit different. And if you're not a developer, that's hard. You've got some stuff you can do with calculated fields. You've got some other what I'll call hacks that you can get in there and do. This probably falls under that category of it's kind of a hack. But they've basically legalized it in the SharePoint world. So they've given us a way to do that, the quote, proper way. So we've got people asking for specific things. The other thing that we have challenges with is that user perception, right? Why can't you just make that column bold? Why can't you just make that column this? It seems easy, and it probably is easy, but if you want to deploy it the, quote, correct way, a lot of times it takes a developer to do that. You have to figure out how that fits in your organization in terms of deploying code. It gets a lot more complex than it needs to be generally. So from a user, there's a divide between the user perception and what it takes to actually do it, quote, the right way. So again, this gives us a way to do things a lot more quickly. Also, SharePoint Designer used to do kind of a lot of the things that we're talking about this morning, but with 2013, they pulled that functionality out. So this is going to fill some of that gap, certainly not all of it, but that is one of the reasons that we're talking about it this morning. All right, so what is client-side rendering? Before SharePoint 2013, a lot more of the work was done on the server side. So you've got all your list data, you've got the way that it's, display templates is now a real term in terms of SharePoint, but you've got the way that the data was going to be displayed. All of that was cranked up on the server side using XSLT and presented to the browser. Now at 2013 and going forward, we've moved things around again. The data is still coming from SharePoint, still coming from the server, but now a lot of the rendering side is happening at the browser level. So you've got your list data, you've got the way that you want it displayed, and it's kicking out HTML. That gives us an opportunity to tweak it. That gives us an opportunity to work with the data before it's displayed. It gives us an opportunity to actually change it after the server is done with it, after the page is done with it, and make some additional changes. That's where this falls in. The other nice thing, and I know one of the big pushes from Microsoft was to use a lot of the standard web technologies, and that's what we're talking about. We're talking about JavaScript, HTML, and CSS. So when we start getting into CSR, and CSR is much broader than just SharePoint, much broader than just the JS Link stuff, but we're talking about the fact that SharePoint has it built in. SharePoint's actually using the same technology to display the page right now. So we're just extending that. We're just saying, all right, you want to display it this way, but I want to tweak it a little bit. Or you can feed that up to me, and now I'm going to change it into something that's a little bit different. I'm going to override it. That's something a term you're going to hear more as we talk through this. It also already has the hooks built in. So again, this is intended to be extended this way. That's one of the reasons that we're talking about it. It's our legal hack to getting in there and playing with the data. At the end of the day, we're just injecting JavaScript into the page. So this is one more way to do it. Prior to 2013, we had to do it with content editor web parts. With 2013 now, we've got JS Link is one way. We've got, there's a script web part that you can put in there. There's going into the master page and doing things that way. So there's a lot of different ways to do it. And from a governance perspective, hopefully you'll have a standard for which way is preferred within your organization and you can be consistent. That is one of the, I don't want to call it a downside, but it is one of the things about using JS Link is that it's another way to put code out there. So you need to make sure that you understand that within your organization and you do it in a way that's not going to be kind of against the norm or against what the regular development folks are talking about. So with that, here comes JS Link. So JS Link, at the end of the day, it's a web part property. If you open up a web part, you do edit web part, scroll all the way down to the bottom under miscellaneous, we've got this little thing down there. When 2013 came out, not many people found it, but the ones that did, were we have no idea what it was. There was no documentation. There's a little bit of documentation now. There's a handful of folks that are actually doing some great blog work and some great digging into this. So we're in a much better place than we were since the last conference, as shown by all the people that raised their hand and are already playing with it. So it's a web part property. It's only available in 2013. So like I said, this isn't something that you could have done in prior versions. So if you're using something other than 2013 or Office 365, this is not a feature that's available to you right now. And it is available across the board with the current version of SharePoint. So it doesn't matter if you're on Foundation or Server or Office 365. It's out there all over the place. About this particular property, basically what you're doing is you're putting a reference into a JavaScript file. And not one. You can actually have more than one in there. That's not something that I'm getting into in too much detail here. But you can have more than one file listed there. The other thing of importance is that it needs to be using a URL token. So the squiggle line site there, you can't just do a relative link. So that's something where a lot of people get tripped up a little bit. Once you figure that out, once you have the pieces in place, then it works really, really, it's a slick thing. So we'll walk you through that really briefly. Something else that I want to highlight too is the fact that the data that's out there, the data is still being managed at the server level. It's still coming from the server. It's still using that list schema or that view to define what data is coming, the filtering, the sorting, all of that stuff. It's still coming up that way. JS Link, by default, is not changing the data at all. All we're doing is changing the way that it's shown on the screen. It might be as easy as just saying, I want to take this data and I want to highlight it or make it bold or, you know, change the CSS for that item. I can change the text that's displayed, but I'm still not changing the data that's behind the scenes. So that's really important to understand. Makes people a little bit more comfortable trying some things out with it before they dig in. So again, some of the basics, making it work. I do have the two resources that I put out there in Yammer right now. I've got a post that's just called a JS Link Hello World. So that'll help you walk through kind of that, getting that token URL out there, getting your JavaScript file. But it's, at the end of the day, you've got a couple of work of core parts that you're working with. You've still got your app, essentially your list. So you're still defining that data. You're going to drop that data with an app part or a web part onto a page. Now, technically, you can still go to that actual view page and say edit page and do your JS Link there. Not something I recommend just because I don't like fussing with those if I don't have to, but technically you can. And we do have one example where we'll be talking about that. So you've got your list. I'm going to go back to list terminology because I'm just more comfortable with it. You've got your list, you've got your web part, and now you've got a JavaScript file, and then the pointer to it. Excuse me. JS Link web part is the property that's going to point to your JavaScript file, and you've got the override, and we'll talk about what that means. You're basically saying, I want this data to do this or to look this way. There's three main override techniques that you have available to you. And I kind of alluded to these earlier. Pre-render is, I've got all the data. The data has been shoved up. I want to be able to tweak it a little bit. If I maybe need to clean up something that's in a specific field, if I might need to display it a little bit, or not display it, but just have a little bit more different information in that data, I can make that change in the pre-render. Again, I'm not pushing this back into the server. I'm just making the change in memory right before it gets rendered into the screen. Overrides are the things we're going to spend most of our time talking about today, and that's the ability to say, I want to override this field or this item or whatever it is that's being fed up to the page. That's where I'm going to do most of the stuff that we're talking about. Post-render is once that page has been pulled together, it gives us one last opportunity to make a tweak. And there are some things that I just can't do as it's being put together that I need to wait until afterwards. And the biggest use case there is doing the traditional DOM manipulation. So looking for a specific tag and tweaking it at that point. Just because of the order of the way things happen and the fact that you need to Well, basically it's that, the order of the way things are rendered, and I need to make a change after we've got that pulled together. So we've got an example for that here as well. So the override opportunities, the things that you can override, fields, so when we're looking at a view, it's the column, right? So I've got my 5, 6, 10, whatever it is, columns identified in my view. That's analogous to the field. So I can go in there and say, I want to take this column and I want to do this with it. An item is going to be that whole row. So instead of just rendering each column separately or overriding each one separately, I'm just saying, let me take control of the whole item and I'll change it into something a lot different, and I'll show you what that means. Header and footer, once you break it down into the item level, I have control over the header and the footer of what's being displayed. So I could put, you know, I could put that add a new item, or I could put a other controls in that header and footer if I really wanted to. And then group. So we've got the group by, and that's just another level of the objects that we have that we can control. So this is a really, really, really simple example of what I'm talking about. In the upper left-hand corner there, I've got just a default view, just a bunch of data coming out of a custom list. What I've done is I've put in a field override and used CSR and JS link on this particular page to change one of my columns. And I just told it, always display this in this column. I don't care what item I'm on, just always display this. So it's really, really simple, and we'll show you what that looks like. But again, the data is not changing. All right, so let's get into some of these examples. Simple and conditional formatting. Kind of similar to what we were just looking at, instead of changing the text that's in there, I want to change the way that it's formatted. So I've got an issue status field, and it's probably hard to see that it's bolded there. Well, that's not too bad. But basically, I've taken that field and I've decided I want to make it bold. Very simple. There we go. And then there was code. So this is basically, I've got my JavaScript file. I didn't mention this before. You can put that JavaScript file in a lot of different places. Most of the examples, or many of the examples that you will see, it's put into the master page gallery. In fact, the first time we walked through this process, and what my primer blog post talks about is putting it in the master page, making sure that you've identified it as the right content type, set a bunch of properties. At the end of the day, that stuff doesn't matter. It's in a location, the file can get to it. It doesn't have to be a certain content type, doesn't have to have the properties in that library. It just needs to be in the location that this page can see it in. So I've created a JavaScript file. For this example, that's all of the code in that JavaScript. So you've got a lot of boilerplate stuff. For our particular example, this is the piece that's doing all the work. I'm overriding the field, so I've decided I want a single field that I want to tweak. I'm identifying the name of that column. Now, this needs to be the internal name. This isn't, so if you go in there and you make a column name that's got two words and you didn't put a space in there, it's going to have the fun characters in between. I picked a standard one, so it has no spaces, but you need to look back at that. Open up, basically go to the list settings and click on that column, and you'll see the actual name of that field. Some of the out-of-the-box ones aren't going to match what they say on the screen. So you need to pay attention to that. There's a lot of places where when you're first playing with this that it's going to not work and it's going to be frustrating. The first one is that JS link, making sure that it's pointing to the file to the right place. If your JavaScript is not properly written, it just won't work. It won't error, it just won't work. So one of the things that's nice, and the way I believe what I walk through in the Hello World, is literally just put a JavaScript file out there that has an alert on it. No other code, none of this stuff, just alert. And get your JS link property set properly so that that alert pops up. Once that pops up, you know you're pointing to the right place and you're getting in your file and you're good to go. So again, lots of places where it can break. So status is the field that I want to override. View. Now, this one's a little bit interesting. Most of the time when you're overriding a view, you're going to have that in there. there are other values that you can put in there, and that's if you want to override forms. So we've got the new form, the display form, and the edit form. This is dictating which type of override that you're using. And then inside the code here, this is a reference to the current data that's in that item. So it's going to go through each item, and it's basically giving us the current value. And if you're looking at the rest of the code there, all I'm doing is adding a bold tag to it. So once we've got this stuff in place, it's bolding the field. So I've created a really simple JavaScript file. I've uploaded it to the master page gallery. I've put my JS link pointer to that file, and I hit refresh, and it's there. Didn't have to do anything with solutions, didn't have to do anything in Visual Studio. All this stuff can happen at the client side. Now, both powerful and very easy for us to use, also a little scary for some folks. So make sure you've got the people that have the right permissions to be doing this. And again, from a governance perspective, we want to know that, oop, I've got one more place than I can put code now. So we need to be able to take a look at that. Hopefully, people that are writing these files are also going to be conforming to whatever code standards you have. So there's a lot of things like that from a governance perspective you want to take a look at. So taking it a step further with conditional formatting, I just did an outright override. Now we can get in there and start tweaking it a little bit based on the data. So this was probably one of the top things that people did in SharePoint Designer. In there, it was a little bit easier, where you literally highlighted the code and then said, hey, I want a rule for this. Well, it's not quite that easy for us, for those power users. But it's not, if you're comfortable with code, this isn't much of a stretch either. So I've changed that little snippet that we showed you before. And instead of just doing the blatant override right there, I'm going to call a function. Okay. I could call a different function for each of my fields. So this is what it looks like if you're trying to do it with multiple fields. Don't put it in multiple JavaScript files. I can basically go down the row and say, I want this column to look this way, I want this column to do this, and kind of go to town with it. Once I'm in there, it changes a little bit. Excuse me. I'm basically building an HTML string at this point. So all I've done is put my conditional in there. Again, I'm still using that same method to grab the data from the current item and do my rule on it. So in this case, I'm checking to see if it's active. If it is, I'm going to show it with bold, and if it's not, I just still kick it out. Now, one of the first things I've seen a lot of people do here is they go, well, if it's bold, or if it follows this, then make it bold. I'm not going to put an else in there, I'll just say whatever. Well, basically, what you just did is blanked it out. So the data is still there, but it's not going to display it. It's an easy tripping point for the first couple of times you play with this. The other thing to note, and I mentioned before, is once you're playing with the code, and if you're in there tweaking it, so that's another good aside. So this is another place where SharePoint Designer still is very useful. And that is, once all of my files have been uploaded to SharePoint Designer, I can be doing my code changes in SharePoint Designer, just hit save, go back to my page, hit refresh, and it works. So that's a great use case for the power users, and developers too, for that matter. But again, if you're changing your code and you inject some sort of error into the JavaScript, it doesn't error, and it basically just reverts back to its default. So all the bold stuff's going to go away. You want to make sure you've got a way to know that it's working when you're playing with that page. So you've seen a couple of examples. In this one, I had two conditionals, one on the issue status and one on the priority. And it works pretty slick. That transition is so long on that one. All right. So an item override. Excuse me. So what we're talking about here, again, is taking that whole entire item and writing it from scratch. So it's a lot more work. Rather than just doing the formatting on this single field, now we're getting into building the entire thing. I'm not going to build this example here. I wanted to show this because it's an out-of-the-box example. This is the summary view. So if you have an announcements list and you pick summary view, most of you have played with this and seen that now I don't have my rows and columns. I've just got another nice way of displaying it. This is a great example of what you can do with an item override. So the code gets a little bit longer, but you can also see that I've got some different overrides. So I no longer have the field override. Now I'm doing an item. I'm calling a function there that I'm going to work on. I can call it the header The header and the footer are optional. I don't have to override those if I don't want to. But I can put some stuff in there if I want to build that page out to make the user experience a little bit more, you know, clean. All right, so once I'm in there, again, I'm just building the string out. So the fields that I've got, the current item title, created, assigned to, all of these, are still pulling from that view. So if you want to use the data, you need to make sure that it's included in the view that you're overriding. Similar to when you're doing a display template and you need to include those all those fields, we're doing that through defining the view. You'll also note when we're looking at this that the assigned to is a little bit different. So it's not always going to, a lot of the examples that we showed earlier were simple text fields. So it was really easy for me just to say, all right, take this text and kick it out. The assigned to is going to be, it's the people and groups field type. So it's coming back as potentially as a list of people. So I need to do it a little bit different to get that data out of there, and I need to do a property rather than just saying just straight out the assigned to field. So you'll find that there's little tweaks like this here and there. But at the end of the day, I'm just building a string. I hope that you guys can build much better ones than me. This is a really lame example, but what you're seeing on the right there is kind of a digest form of an output. So I've got some information in the header where it's saying more of a digest form, and then I'm going through my item by item that shows up in that view, and I'm pulling it all together. Made some stuff bold, I put some text in there, that's about it. Hopefully, all you developers are going, okay, so I can do some really crazy stuff at this point. You can essentially build forms this way, you can essentially build interfaces into other items, you know, jumping to lookup items and things like that. You can do some really great stuff. So for an item override, though, you can create that header if you really want it. You're spending most of your time building out the display data, and you're using all the standards, the HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. Another nice thing, too, is that you can actually use your other third-party tools to build that page out how you want it to look, and then just take the HTML from that and piece it together in your override. So you don't have to be doing it by hand in here. But it becomes a pretty powerful tool. All right, so this is another example that I liked being in my power user role, and that's hiding form fields. So I want to be able to create a list to manage things, like a request is a good example. I'm going to have a request list where people say what they're asking for, why they're asking for it, and maybe pick a category. When I'm managing that information, I want to have a lot more. I want to have maybe the person that I've assigned it to, that work to. I want to have comments for me, for the people that are managing that data. I might want to have the status or priority. I'm going to managing a lot of the data to manage that request. Well, I put all that stuff into a single list. Now, when I create a form for people or when I create that experience on the page, they hit new item, boom, my user sees 15 different fields, of which I want them to fill in 3. So it gets a little bit confusing for them. It's a little bit overwhelming. They don't know if they should fill out all of them, whatever. That's the use case we're talking about. There are some other out-of-the-box ways to deal with this. There's a content type switching approach that Sarah Hazy has talked about quite a bit. So I can have all the same data in my list and have multiple content types. One content type that only has those 3 fields, one content type that has all of the rest of them. So, and then I'm also going to put a workflow in there. So I create a new item with the original content type, 3 items. As soon as that new item is submitted, I run a workflow that changes the content type. So now when I open it and edit or display, it's going to show me all of my items. Well, that's all great. That's all cool stuff. That's a great approach. But to me, I don't like adding working part or moving parts that I don't necessarily need. What happens if the workflow doesn't run? What if it errors in the middle and it doesn't quite get there? Managing content types is sometimes a pain. So there's things like that that go into it. I just want to hide those fields. So that's what we're talking about in this case. So we all know that there's 3 different forms created with each app. There's the new form, edit form, and display form. We can overwrite each one of them separately. We're going to show you a little bit about how to change that. This is the exception where you have to go in there and actually edit the form itself rather than a page that the web part is on. And we'll show you what that looks like. There was one other thing I wanted to mention. What was it? I'll remember it as we go in. All right. So we're limited to what we can do with the code that we had earlier, so the base override. And that's because in a form, I've got this table. I've got a table that's displaying the field name and the field, the value. The override, by default, if I want to override a field in these forms, it's just overriding the that field, not the title. So I don't have control over that whole row. So it's not something that I can do in the same way. Does that show up as green up there? Oh, it's just that. Okay. So when you're looking at it, I want to be able to control both of these. So in this one, I'm cheating a little bit where I'm extending. I'm going not just using JSLink and CSR, but I'm also employing jQuery to help us with that. You can do it with other JavaScript, but that's just what we're doing here. So, excuse me. Basically, what we're doing is we're using jQuery to find that field, and there's a couple of different ways to do it. You can see for the comments field, I use text area, and for the assigned to, I use a div. But what I'm doing is I'm finding that field the data is in, and instead of changing just that data, I'm grabbing that whole row. So that's how I'm able to hide that entire row. So it's taking me from the default form that shows all of my fields to being able to pick and choose which ones I want to show either on the new form, edit form, or display form. And display form is a little bit easier to work with because it's kicking it out like it's in the list, in that list format. In this, it's a form field, so I have to do a little bit more if I want to tweak it. But I do have control to get in there and tweak those form fields if I want to. So I can go in there and change the formatting of them. I can change it from a drop-down to a radio. I can do things like that, depending on how much effort I want to put into it. But for me, for this particular scenario, if I want to be able to clean out or hide those fields, it's a pretty slick and easy way for me to create a JS link, literally put this stuff in there and just say, all right, here are the things that I want to hide. For a power user or for a cut-and-paste kind of developer, they're going to be able to go in there and get those fields and hide them really quick. It's the same place, so you're still putting the JavaScript in its own JavaScript file. I put mine in the master page, and then I'm pointing to it with the JS link. So it's the exact same process we used before. And I didn't get into like the step-by-step of where we're putting this file and where we set the JS link. If you want to get into that detail, and we can talk about that if we have time, which looks like we're doing since I talk fast. I've got a primer blog post out there that literally steps through each of these things. So it does a pretty good job at walking you through those basics. Where are you? What was that? What's causing it to flash? I haven't seen it in mine. I do know that there are, it does get into some of like the MDS stuff can trip up on in there. So that might cause some issues. I want to say I saw flashing early on, and they might have put a fix in that took care of that. But I have never seen it. In the last year, I haven't seen any flashing like that. All right. Yes?
You add 1-1 JS link.
Yes. Yeah, that's not talked about very often. But in that JS link property, you can put as many as you want, really. Yeah. So by default, with all the examples I'm doing, I'm calling one. But you can have more than one in there. And there's a couple of blog posts with examples of how to do it. I don't remember if it's comma delimited or bar. Is it a bar? Okay. It was my second guess. So, all right. So some of the things about this one, because of what we're doing, from a governance perspective, you want to pay attention to one, should I use this approach at all, or do you have standards for doing it? There might be a broader form standard that people are using. But figure out when you want to use this approach and when you don't. And if you don't, make sure you're identifying what the different approaches are that are available to folks. And make sure you're consistent with that broader approach. Again, we're basically introducing another method, right? Another way to do this. As was highlighted by a few people, it's another place to hide code. So that's both good and bad. If we want to keep control of our environment, we want to make sure we know that this is a known way of doing things. Another governance note here is that this is not security. This would fall under that security by obscurity approach. So we're not actually stopping them from seeing the data. We're not actually stopping them from changing it. At the lowest level, SharePoint security is at the item level. All we're doing is basically putting a blindfold over it. So, keep that in mind when you're using it. Yep. So that's outside of the scope of what we're talking about, but yes. So on a web part, you could, maybe not out of the box, but there are ways to target. Some web parts you can, some web parts you have to use a kind of a cheat to do it, but yeah. All right. I suppose I should have been throwing these hacky sacks at the people that are asking questions. I'm afraid I would hit other people, though. All right, we'll find a way to give this stuff away. Row highlighting. So this is another one of those examples that I think a lot of people use SharePoint Designer for in the past. So hopefully this is going to be an example of something that you can take back and use. This is going to be something where we're using that post-render. So again, this is something where we're not going to have control over the whole row in that field or item override. I suppose an item you could probably put this together if you wanted to. But why? Because we're going to be able to do it a lot easier with this approach. So we're looking at the onPostRender, and we're calling another function. And what we're getting to here is basically in the postRender, we're going to iterate through all of our items. It's already been put together. Now we're looking at it after the fact. So I'm going through and I'm saying, if this row is high, there we go, I'm going to highlight it. So if you're a power user, or if you're, again, we're going back to that cut and paste user, this is pretty boilerplate at this point. You can literally cut and paste this code, and you can pick which field that you're using as your conditional, as your rule, put your value in there that you want to act on, and you can have different rules in here if you want to. And you're telling it to format that row in using this color, using the background color. And from that, you're going to get this. So it's a very, very, this example is a very, very simple way of doing that. If you want to make it more complex, if you want to have additional multiple rules, I want this data to look this color, this data to look that color, this one to be highlighted, this one, to, you know, whatever you want it to do with it, take this simple example and kind of build on it from there. What do you mean? Let's talk about it afterwards, because again, now we're going into stuff that I'm not as comfortable talking about. But, yeah. All right, so this is my last example. I'm talking really fast. All right. So this is one that I've used at a client before, and it was really, for us, it was a great fit, because it was really easy for us to implement without having to get into building a custom web part and doing things like that. So what this was based on is we built a external facing site. We had an extranet site, essentially. And kicking off, how many people liked the way that we kick off workflows in SharePoint? You've got to find the menu, you've got to say start workflow, you have to pick the workflow you want, and then you have to click start. Does that work for everybody? You're all excited about it? Just leave it that way then. All right, so what we wanted to do is we couldn't guarantee that, what was that? I thought someone said something. We couldn't guarantee that all of our users were comfortable with SharePoint yet, so we needed to make that use case a lot easier. So what we did was we're basically building again, this isn't rocket science, but we're building a link to kick that thing off a lot easier. Okay? So we're gonna build a challenge in here for you guys. All right, so what we did, in this case, we've added a text field to the list, and all we're gonna do is we're gonna use that field to override it so we can put our button in there, our link in there. We're going to add that new field to the view so that we have access to that field and can override it. And then we also want to have the source link of the page we want to go back, and we'll walk through that again. But here's what we're doing. So again, this is a very easy field override. There's my new field, poke. It's a view. I'm calling my function, and I'm going to be building that HTML out. So in order to build this out, I have to go to an item, and I have to go through those steps on our own, the steps that we're all used to. Find the workflow menu, start it off, now grab that link. It's going to have a lot of stuff baked into it already, but we're going to deconstruct it and kind of rebuild it. It's already got the list ID, nice, lovely little GUID for you. It's got the template ID. Now, the thing that we want to note here is that template ID, every time you publish a workflow, that template ID changes. So we can build this now, it'll work, and then if for some reason down the road you need to tweak that workflow and republish it, you're going to have to come back into your JS link file and change that template ID. Otherwise, this link will no longer work. Therein lies my challenge to you guys. As JavaScript and object model gurus, go out there and find how we can always go get the latest template ID so that we don't have to break it. You're going to tell me how to do it? All right, we'll talk later. Or even better is go out to the Yammer page and post your stuff out there. Because instead of us having all the conversation here and then missing out on it, that's what I love that page for. Let's have some ongoing conversations in there. So we're going to grab that link. We're going to grab the URL of the page we want to go to so we can put it in the source. And then we also need to figure out what that link is going to be called, right? So I called it poke. You might have to run through HR and marketing and figure out what the right text is that needs to show up in that button. But you need to figure that out. This is really ugly because it's hard to wrap GUID stuff. All right. So what we're doing here, there it is. All right. So all we're really doing, again, I took that link and I tore it apart. I've got the current items. This is, as I'm going through item, I can customize that link. So if I wanted to not kick off a workflow, but I wanted to go to another page and pass an ID into it, that's, again, I have that ID, and all I'm doing is baking it into the URL. I've got the source, nice and ugly as it is. This is just where I want that page to go back. The way that I'm usually building these is I'm creating a new page, I'm dropping that web part on there, and I'm editing that web part. So what happens is if I kick off the workflow and I don't pay attention to the source, I end up back on the list view instead of on my page. So that's why I need to pay attention to this. I just want to make sure that once my workflow has been kicked off, it's going to go back to the page that the users had. And there's a... Yep? I didn't pay attention to it? I thought that was a limitation. I didn't think that was a limitation. I mean, I think that's a limitation within here that you probably can't get past. What was that? There you go. So, again, seems easy. Here's what our text is going to be, but you might want to check with whoever controls what the page looks like before you put it in there. Poke probably isn't going to get past all of your HR departments. All right. So, there's my template ID. This is the one that we're going to need to change if I change my workflow and republish it, or if this guy's got a wonderful solution that we can use. You writing it right now? There he goes. All right. So what we're going to end up with, again, is a traditional list view, but now I've got a link in there. So my users can have, they don't have to dig into that menu. They don't have to go find the workflow they want. They can just click that link. Now you can take this as far as you want, right? I can create a single column, and I can put basically my control in there. I can make it a drop-down with start this workflow. I could put additional links and say this workflow versus that one. I can basically build a UI kind of on how to, if I want to edit this item, if I want to add a new one, if I want to add a related one, all kinds of fun stuff. But at the end of the day, this was a nice and easy example for my users to come in. What I was using it for was being able to claim a shift, right? So I went in there and I was saying, I'm going to make these things available for people, and if you want to claim it, just hit this button or just hit this link rather than them having to kick off a workflow or do some other complicated things. Now, challenge number two, I'm going to keep looking at him now, is from here, we're still going to that initiation form. We're still going to that form that says start or cancel. Eventually, it'd be nice if we could get past that and just say, I want a button that just starts this off. So again, I don't have to click that second time. Now, I can use that initiation form in other ways. I can use it as a way to validate that they actually want to be starting this one. I can put more content there and say that, oh, do you really want to do this? Or here's what you're signing up for. But I can also see some use cases where if I want to do, say, hey, just start this workflow. Don't ask me again. Just start it. Just skip us right past that initiation form. So those are things that we can work on. Homework number two. All right. What are you going to use CSR for? Have people been using this type of stuff? Or who has been using this type of stuff? All right. Has it been successful? Yes. Does this fit well into your out of the box ways of tweaking things and doing real development? That's it. I'm downsizing myself. This is real development. That's one thumbs up there. Is this a good thing? All right, how many folks have never seen this before and are going to go home and start playing with it? How many folks were playing with it while we were in the session? Come on, someone was. All right, so hopefully this is a good thing for you. Some other recap, and I talked really fast, so we can hang out and chat for a bit. Minimal download strategy. As I mentioned earlier, there can be some conflicts between things. It's not quite gonna act the way that you want it to act. So you can do one of two things. You can turn it off, and if it's a big deal on your site, then you don't have to worry about it too much. But if it is something that you want to continue to keep on your site, there are ways to make your code MDS friendly. So there's a blog post on that, not mine, someone else's. But you can basically wrap your code with this other solution so that it is MDS friendly, so that you can leave this on and still make it work. I think we talked about a lot of this stuff already. We want to make sure that you're still using code guidelines, right? I mean, JavaScript is code. So we still want to make sure that we're following the rules, that we're doing it in a standard way within an organization. Come up with a standard for where you're going to keep your files. Is it going to be in your master page gallery? Are you going to create another document library where you want to store it? Whatever it is, decide on a standard and make sure that that's communicated to the people that have the capabilities to do this. Because we're adding another place where you can put code, let's at least make it a standard so we always know where to find it. Let's make sure we've got best practices for the libraries that you're calling. I didn't do anything fancy other than in that using the jQuery, but because we're in JavaScript, we can really call on any of these things that we want to. Basically it's limitless. You can go out there and do some really cool stuff. If you're in a scenario where you're encouraging your power users, the folks that are comfortable with the cutting and pasting code, maybe introduce some code review into that. Let's give them an opportunity to sit down with your developers and say, hey, maybe you could do it this way or maybe that way, or, oh my gosh, what in the world are you doing? This should really just be a custom web part. Gives you an opportunity to take a look at what they're doing. It also gives you an opportunity to ramp up their skill set so that they can maybe do some more of this easy stuff and let the development do the harder stuff. From a governance, again, perspective, the more of the stuff that you can put out there in terms of documentation and explaining to people how to do this, you're going to be better off in the long run. So give them the tools that they need to be successful. Some related sessions this afternoon. Scott Hillier is going to be talking about some of those JavaScript libraries. Again, that's this afternoon. We've also got Corey Roth on Thursday, who's talking about display templates. So he's going to be touching on some of those CSR concepts as well, some things that you can take a look at. And I'm not going to flip through all of these, but I've got 4 or 5 slides here at the end with links, so you can go take a peek. These are the ones that I have in my blog. I will have additional ones up there as well. So I've got the primer in the Hello World, hopefully help you guys get started that haven't played with this yet. I've got the row highlighting and conditional formatting up there. I am going to add the other ones as well. What I'm also going to do once we're done here is I'm going to take most of these references that I've got and I'll put them on that Yammer page. So on the Yammer page, you can have a list of related content. So there's a links area, and I'm going to put a bunch of these in there as well. So if you haven't gotten into Yammer yet, you really should. Take a look at it. You can get this slide deck. You'll have quick access to the links. We can do questions and answers and maybe, like, how do you find me if we need to talk about stuff later? Yeah, I'm not going to read through all these. So these are some of the other folks that have done some blogging on JSLink and CSR. So there are other good ones that you can take a look at. Martin Hatch is doing a whole series on it. Some of his stuff is more from the Visual Studio side. So being able to go in there and employ JSLink as part of a solution that you're building within Visual Studio. Did you guys get your pictures? I see people holding stuff up. Do I need to go back? We're all good? Go. Yep. I can barely hear you. Well, so his question is, he's noticing that some of the things that we're doing, like my bold example or things like that, are things that we don't even necessarily need the JavaScript for. We can employ it with just CSS. So yeah, there's some styling things we can do with straight up CSS, but you still need to make sure that a lot of the data that's coming back doesn't have a tag that you can anchor on for the CSS. Right. Yeah. So that's where I don't have to worry about it. Are there some things that we're doing here that we can do with CSS? Absolutely. That might be one of the patterns that you pick up where you say, I'm going to go in there and use pre-render or to basically put some tags on there and then be able to use CSS as the way to edit it. So there's some other ways that you can jive it as well. Yeah, so what he's talking about is being able to, instead of building this HTML manually, is using CSS for what it's for and doing some of that for us. I have not played with pre-render to do that type of thing. That's where you would probably do it, though, is get into pre-render and tweaking it or tagging it, wrapping it with stuff that you can get to with CSS. That'd be a way to try that out. It's the first place I would go. All right, second. So I got to... Leave it up? All right. Nope. Okay. Could you do all of this stuff with 2010 instead of 2013? So again, not the JS link. So some of the stuff that we talked about are things that you did previously in SharePoint Designer. If I wanted to bold it or if I wanted to do a conditional formatting on either an item or a row, that's slam dunk SharePoint Designer. If you're getting into changing the data, I suppose you could do that in SharePoint Designer too. So there's different ways of doing it in 2010. You're not going to be able, it's going to be a lot harder to do that pre-render and post-render stuff in 2010, but there's probably ways you could do it. Yeah, you could capture it in the page pre-render too. A lot of this, some of this stuff you might do in a master page, too. So this is really meant to be that kind of a step past out of the box, a way that I can get in there and tweak. For power users aren't going to be doing anything in the master page. They're not going to, this is just another way to tweak it. Yes. So that's covering yours, too. All right. So the question is, did you notice that if you do JS link on a page with multiple web parts, that it's going to hit all of them? And the answer is yes, I do know that. No, yeah. So I didn't touch on that in my example. I do touch on that in the primer article that's out there. Essentially, you have the ability you do have some other ways to narrow it down. You can narrow it down by the type of list it is, the base list ID. And sometimes they're the same base list ID too. So I mean, there's challenges there. So there's basically ways that you can target it, but you do need to be careful with the overlap because at the end of the day we're playing with tags. So basically, when you add JS link, the question is it verifying the fact that is the JS link attached to the web part or to the page? Yes. So the web part property is on a web part, okay, but because it's the code, it's essentially the code that's being kicked out by the entire page, that's where things are tripping on each other. So you're inserting, at the end of the day, you're inserting JavaScript into the page, and that's why things touch, they start to slip through. So you need to do a little bit of targeting to make that happen. Yep. Which example was that? Yeah, let's talk about that one off. That's not boilerplate to me, not to other stuff. So we'll come back. We can talk about that offline. There was another one over here. Yep. So if we're looking at where is it being basically included? Raymond, do you remember where it's being included? Yeah. I'd have to go look at it again. I mean, when you get into the page, you can see it. It's listed as some of the resources, but I don't remember what order it is. Yep. Let me just make sure I don't have any other ones. So, two other things, or thanks to all these great people. Raymond's over there helping out. Don't forget to fill out your feedback now that half the people have left. Try these out, though, and get on that Yammer page, because I think it's a great way. There's going to be a lot of different ways for you guys to use this stuff. I would love to hear some of the other examples of what you're doing and how we can do it better, for that matter. All right, so now back to other questions. Yes. Sorry. The context sensitive stuff. At the end of the day, it's going to depend on how you do it. We'll go back to SharePoint's unofficial motto, it depends. But it depends on how you do it, right? If you're doing just a field override, then you're still going to get that contextual stuff. If you're doing an item override, then you're likely kind of messing up some of that stuff. If you need it, yeah. Yep, so some of the even more advanced examples is where you're getting into building a callout override. So now, you know, I can have a field where I'm hovering over it and it's popping up, you know, something else. So, I mean, there's, at the end of the day, we're inserting JavaScript. You can go to town and do whatever you want with it. So, all right? Hopefully you guys are going to find that useful. People, what was that? The Yammer page. So basically, you get into SPC14, the Yammer network. Search for this session. Search for SPC318. There's a file. That file is this slide deck. And there hopefully is, Raymond, did anyone comment on it at all? Sweet. So Raymond's out there right now looking at it, and there are people posting. And I think they're going to keep this up for a while. So it'll be a good place for us to have conversations, and we can transfer those elsewhere if needed. All right. Thank you guys all for coming. I hope this was useful.